Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Soccer matters.
Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro de Madrid, gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Uribe!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We roll on here tonight, and it's always a blend of the domestic and international we want, and certainly our next guest does have that. He is Eric Sviatchenko, the Dynamo center back. He joins us now. Eric, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so at the time of taping this, I heard you were in the weight room. How much weight work do you do during the regular season?
We do actually quite a lot in Houston Dynamo, more than I've experienced previous. I think it's kind of different philosophies, different clubs. How do they work about that? So it actually tends to be quite a lot of gym works here in this club, but it works out because we want to be a team who can press forward, who can be dominant also without the ball, and you have to have that kind of physicality, and that's where you go into the gym and you work on different things to keep up with that. So yeah, we have a lot of gym work.
Climate wise, now that you're into this a little bit, you're playing more, you know, when I was speaking to you the first time, you were still coming back from injury. How have you adjusted to that, and how difficult has that been? Because when I came here to play on a pro team in the 80s, it took a while for me to get adjusted to it.
It's certainly a big factor and a difficult factor. I'm getting used to the training now in the heat. I think I've going through the training sessions pretty well. I feel I'm in my kind of habitat in some way, that I know what to do. But I would still say that when we play at Shell Energy Stadium, it kind of holds the heat on a next level. So the game we played LAFC was my first initial kind of heat exposure, and it was a battle. It was going through 45 minutes of being in kind of a fog, just going grinding through it. But then it's getting better and better, and I'm just thinking, imagine how tough I have it, and I'm getting used to it in some way over the past next months. But the guys who's coming here to play us must feel horrible. So it has to be that factor as well when we play teams, that we can last longer, we can outplay them also with this mindset of we're used to it. If we take care of our bodies, then we need to get used to it. But of course, it's in Denmark, we have comfortable heat, nice in the summer, and then you're exposed to kind of a blanket of heat where you are just wrapped in it. So it's I'm getting along, but it's still something that I need to get used to.
Eric Sviatchenko joining us. Career at Celtic, Midtjylland, also the Danish national team. It's pretty remarkable. I assume you're probably hydrating like you've never hydrated before in your life, right?
I am, for sure. And we have hydration tests quite often. So our nutritionist, Hannah, takes care of that. So that's a good thing for us that we know we are on top of that. But I'm just used to having a bottle of water everywhere I go, and I'm telling my family as well, because they came over now for the remainder of my contract, which is nice to have them here with 2 months without them. So I tell my kids that you have to hydrate, and think, why? But it's because it's so warm here. It's something else.
Yeah. Eric Sviatchenko joining us. So look, I found out about your father. Your father is an incredibly noted man. I was so interested in his career as an architect based on politics in the Ukraine and Russia and worldwide. And he was an artist. And even there was a collaboration with you there, Close Up and Private, which was more of a fashion related, I think, a photography series.
Exactly.
I mean, this was incredible for me to see your father. So tell me a little bit about your dad and then take it into, you know, he was very artistic. Does that mesh with football in you? Because I think it does.
So we always, when we talk about our careers, my dad and I, we always kind of equal them in some way. We always measure it upon someone likes my father's work, someone doesn't, someone likes my playing style, someone doesn't. So, and we're always kind of at an exam when you have had a series of paintings done, then you come and you show it, you exhibit it, and people come and they either buy it or they don't in some way. So it's a really tough world to be in. That's the same with the football world, that sometimes you wait it too low, and sometimes it's perfect, you know. So these conversations we have, and the highs and lows are amazing in football. So are they in the artistic world. But yeah, my father has always been a big inspiration for me and my siblings in regards to both with art, fashion, aesthetics, and the way of living as well. My father came with my mom more than 30 years ago to Denmark with only one suitcase, and wanted to make a living for the entire family based off being an artist. And back in the Soviet Union, before it imploded, you didn't have all the opportunities. And that's why my father came to Denmark and said, hey, this is a place where I can explore. This is a place where I can actually liberate myself a little bit more from the kind of conform system that he was in. And since then, it's just been amazing to be as a son. And in that world, we have always been very close to my father in the sense of he's taken us on multiple journeys around Europe. Either he took my sister or my brother or me, and we traveled, like going on a fishing trip. We then went to Milan instead, or Paris or London, and went to different museums and galleries. So we grew up really fast and knew how to be in the adult world very, very early in our lives. So I would say I'm cultural stimulant from my father's and mother's really like persistent way of giving us the cultural side of it. So yeah, I'm happy with that and exploring everywhere we are. It's nice now. I'm in Houston. I've been to the Menil Collection, which was an amazing experience for me. Something,
one of my favorite places, by the way.
Yeah,
and it's free. It's the most amazing collection. And she could have put that in Paris. You know, there was a lot of cities bidding for her collection.
That's amazing. Yeah. But I was stunned to see those. So many of my favorites, so many of my family's favorites. I was just close up with them in some way. So that was a great experience. And then you asked to Close Up in Private. That's something that we started back in 2009. When the block culture came, and my father is obviously from another generation, but he has his take on it. So he wanted to inspire whoever wants to go on online to watch Close Up in Private. So it was kind of a browsed thing. You can browse down and get inspiration to your everyday life of how to dress. But it wasn't so much about the brands. It was more about the style and how you put colors together. So it kind of, how he does collages. He just did it in photography with me as a male model. At that point, I was 18 years old, which was a fun thing to be with my father doing these things. And then since then, we have had a lot of collaboration with different brands or takes on different things, but we had our saying. So there's been a nice thing and something that is now worked upon by on the side, and it's involved into something else. Also, we have another company. So we have different things together that is nice to work with.
Yeah, remarkable. So your father, Sergey, what an inspirational guy to you, architect, artist. Do you ever reflect, like I reflect back, you know, my father was in World War II, survived Okinawa. Yeah, listen, if not for the atomic bomb, me and my siblings, we're not here. That's a fact of life. And I think about that often now that he's passed. I thought about it before. Do you ever think about if your dad hadn't moved you, to Denmark, what it would have been like growing up in the Ukraine more?
I have. My sister and I was born in Denmark the year after they came. So especially that kind of the story that my father told us was that he was having this kind of cultural center called Sovjart. And at that point, just before, some years before, in 86, Perestroika and Glasnost happened. So obviously the Western world were a bit more attracted to the Eastern world. So in that sense, my father had this cultural kind of group that was invited to Denmark. But just before he was invited to Denmark, or cultural diplomacy in some way, there was a letter from Munich, actually, that they were supposed to go to Munich instead of going to Denmark. So they were talking about Munich, and then this letter came in and it said Denmark in some way. And then the cultural kind of minister said to my father, hey, maybe you should explore Denmark instead of going to Munich. And my father said, well, I don't know much about Denmark, but I'll take Denmark. So, you know, so many things happen of coincidence, and we had our life. We have our life in Denmark. I have my family. We are so happy to be from Denmark and have lived our life in Denmark with all the kind of inspirational trips to different parts of Europe. So when people ask me, your mom and dad, are they Ukrainian, are they Soviet Union, are they Danish? I would say they're internationalists in some way, because they have always been taking upon that kind of cultural aspect of Europe, of the world, and giving it to us in some way.
What a wonderful way to be brought up. We're talking to Eric Svechenko, Houston Dynamo defender. More or less pressure in MLS, and pressure, as we all know, comes in a lot of forms, self-pressure, pressure from the media. More or less pressure in MLS?
Less.
Take me at the pressure at Celtic.
Much more. Yeah. So it's different. I've thought about it since I've started playing, that it's a different league. It's, you can go unbeaten for four games, and suddenly you go to a place where you lose 3-0 out of nowhere. So there's kind of these rhythms in the league that is a bit more, I can't put it into words what's happening, but it's different. And I would still say that there's not much interest in some way of, I know Houston is a huge city. You have different sports where football isn't the biggest one. So the kind of pressure that's put upon us is coming from the self-pressure that we want to be the best. It's not coming from the media. It's not coming from me hearing a lot of things from the fans. So it's way different than it was in Celtic, because it was evolved around football 24/7. The same in Denmark, that we at Midtjylland was a top team that had to win every single game. So if we lost the game 3-0, it would be all over the media. I would need to go out there and speak as a captain. Why did you lose? You don't feel that the same here. But hopefully it's going to change whenever we're going to be better and better. And now we are in top four. We want to stay there. We want to go to the playoffs, which then, of course, puts on more pressure when you are in the top. And at some point, you need to tell out loud what your goal are. And I think that also puts on pressure if you want to have a goal out there that's stated, instead of just grinding through it and hoping for something. And of course, Houston Dynamo the last season hasn't been performing as they hoped for. And now we are in a spot where it's in our hands, and we need to grab it.
Playing with Hector Herrera in front of you, and you've played with many, many very good midfielders in front of you in your career. Take me into that. What's it like? Where does it rank amongst some of the others you played with?
No, I think Hector is, I enjoy watching him, and especially knowing that he has been in Atletico Madrid and played at Porto. I actually saw him when I was a young kid. He's not that older than me, so I was maybe 22, 21, and I was in Porto having my surgery, and I went there and watched the Porto against Atletico Madrid in a Europa League game, and I asked Hector if he remember he played, and we checked it online, and he actually played that game. So I saw him playing for Porto at that stadium there, and now to play with him, it's of course it's nice, and I like the intensity he brings to the game whenever he's on his front foot, and he goes to that repressure, and his vision as well is really, really good. He holds the ball really well, but of course we need a we need to also remember that Hector cannot do everything by himself, and we need to be a team, and within that team, I think he will be even better, and everyone else around will be even better. So at this point, it's great to have him. He's a fun character in the dressing room too. So far it's been a good relationship.
So what have you learned about MLS maybe that you didn't know coming into it? I mean, I know there were a lot of unknowns. Anything that kind of jumps out that's different outside of the weather, the travel, all the basics that generally a foreign player will talk about. Is there something else that jumps out? Maybe the way training is done in this country, whatever.
There's some things I think, especially that kind of closed system is something new for me, that the league has so much to say in MLS, which is new for me. Everything has to go through the league. So that kind of creates kind of a, that the clubs are in the league and then don't have that much to say, which I was very used to in Michelin. For instance, I just went to the CEO and asked him, hey, we need something. Yeah, of course, we'll find out. It's different here. It's something that I need to get used to. And also that kind of trading system. And it's something that for me is new. And the stories that I've heard about how it happens sometimes it's mind blowing. And sometimes I think you got to protect the players even more in some way in a world where you really never know. It's a very short career in football. That's one of the things. And then, of course, all the players that has been different places around MLS, they get to know each other really well and they play against each other. So that camaraderie is something that is new for me in some way, that when we play a game, after a game, we have either won or we lost, then there is a lot of communication within the teams because they know each other. And that's new for me because when I go for a game, it's about winning or losing, nothing else. And I wouldn't even speak to my best friend from Denmark when we had played against them. So that's something that is new for me. But it's a good thing, obviously, because they have had so many things together. So that kind of knowing each other, even though it's a huge country, they know each other really, really well because they've either been in academies, colleges, whatever, and then they play in this league together.
Do you worry about that though a little bit from a competitive standpoint?
Sometimes I do. It's not something that is, I think, is so big of a deal, but it's just something that I need to get used to in some way, that I would celebrate a win with the fans much more than I would stand there and maybe do. But it's something that I also talk with some of the boys, and they say to me, listen, it's just something that we are so used to in some way, and it doesn't need to be that we are not caring about winning or losing. It's just a way of it is. And I respect that, of course, 100%. So in general, I think the league is strong, but I also think that the teams that can outthink the other team would win. So so if you could take out all the athleticism and all the attributes of pace and strength, but be the clever team and be in an amazing kind of formation and know how to play, I think that will give you so much success. And that's what we have seen, especially again against LAFC, the two games we played. We played like that and we had success. So that's nice to see that can actually happen here.
Last one before I let you go ahead of the Seattle game this weekend. By the way, Eric and the Dynamo will be at Seattle to take on the Seattle Sounders. This is a great interview here. At home, you know, this has been the best possession team I believe we've ever seen in the history of the club as far as the ability to hold the ball, the likes of Artur, now yourself playing out of the back to them, Hector, Coco. Why doesn't that translate on the road more? Why are you not able to maybe control games on the road more at timely moments with extended possession?
That's a good question. We actually also we had some meetings in regards to after the Austin game where we didn't really succeed in keeping that ball for those moments where we need to. And we talked about the shape, and our shape wasn't the right, where we want to build up with the three. We want to create that kind of box midfield, and if it's shifted or if someone gets into a wrong position, then everything is going to get shifted, and then you will be in the wrong positions, wrong angles, not the triangles that we need, and then suddenly we don't get that kind of feeling. That's one of the explanations. The other thing is that sometimes football is not a a curve where you just every single game you have the same kind of outcome. Sometimes you have a game where, for instance, against Austin's myself, like my diagonals normally sits right in the chest of my teammate. They all went out of the pitch. So of course, sometimes it happens that you don't get that level you want to, and then you don't get that game you actually were supposed to have in mind. But we need to be aware of that going away, thinking in that shape, doing the same things, and of course being brave. It's down to the thing that you are away from home. You wanna really upset the opponent, and that's by being brave. You wanna play the passes. You still wanna play at home, and it shouldn't change. That's the mindset we need to have.
Eric, wonderful interview. Love it from a hardened pro like yourself. Outstanding career. Really interesting to learn about your father as well. I mean, that I just stumbled onto that, and then I was like, whoa, okay, he's got quite a resume here. It was just very interesting to read about. I want to thank you for coming on. I'd love to have you come on again sometime and really dig into your time at Celtic, because we have so many Celtic fans around the country. And having grown up in New Jersey and near a Scottish area, I kind of was introduced to the whole Celtic history. So thank you so much again, and best of luck against Seattle.
Thank you, Glenn. Bye.
All right. That's the one and only Eric Svechenko. Dynamo taking on Seattle Sounders this weekend, and we appreciate that time. That's a great interview there. We'll take a break here. It's Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. That is the number. We'll take a break. We've got more to come.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. As always, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. All you got to do is call 713-CALL-NOW. They're bilingual. They'll handle your case. John and his firm will work for you 24-7, nights and weekends. And, of course, they are bringing you the best in soccer talk, self-proclaimed. All right, one of our favorite guests, TV3. We go to Spain and Barcelona. He is Jordi Sunyer. Jordi, thank you as always for coming on.
Thank you for having me. Good afternoon. By the way,
It was nice via Zoom to meet your son, Alex. And we're looking forward to charting his progress in the future as a footballer. You told
maybe we can talk about him in the future as a pro footballer. It's difficult, you know, young kids. The most important thing is that they enjoy playing football. That's the most important thing. If they don't get to pro football, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, he's a good looking young man. All right, let me take you into La Liga, because you know the commercialization of the game globally now it's off the charts. You got Middle Eastern money coming into this. You know, I worry a little bit about the authenticity of football, certainly in the U.S. I'm not necessarily speaking for South America and other places, but I worry about that. And, you know, I've listened to some of the past things that Silvio Berlusconi said, and just, you know, about how the Serie A was going to be left behind. Is there any concern about that overall with La Liga, and what's the conversation around football commercialism and La Liga's culture?
Well, it's a difficult question, because there are many aspects to talk about when speaking about commercialization of La Liga. Of course, football is a global sport, and it's a global business, and investors from all over the planet look for the most powerful, the most reliable, and the most profitable brands. And probably right now, these brands, most of these brands are not in Spain. We have two very powerful brands. It's, of course, Barcelona and Real Madrid. But you have many other powerful brands in Europe, and many of them are in the Premier League. You have Manchester United, of course, Manchester City. You have Chelsea, Arsenal, Tottenham, teams coming from London, which is a truly global city, one of the capitals of the world. So the problem in Spain is that as we have these two very powerful brands, what I call the old firm of Spanish football, just like Celtic and Rangers in Scotland, the other teams are in risk of being left behind. And I think La Liga has concerns about this because one of their last measures has been yesterday, in fact, yesterday as we record this segment, they have eased the restrictions for buying new players. There were strict financial restrictions to clubs in order not to have more debt, not to increase their debt. And La Liga has eased these restrictions because they were seeing that in this first days of the transfer market, even if officially a transfer market doesn't open in Spain until July the 1st, many of the transfers were between Spanish clubs. And so the thing was, for example, Javi Galán, Celta left back, going to Atletico Madrid, or talk of Pablo Maffeo, Mallorca right back, going to Atletico Madrid. So that's transfers between Spanish clubs and from lower clubs to more powerful clubs. And that means Spanish clubs are not intervening or are not important in the global transfer market. And I think La Liga has concerns about this. And they are concerned about the fact that La Liga may lose this edge in being powerful in the global world of football. So, I really think there's this concern, but you only need to look at La Liga and how Barcelona and Real Madrid have dominated these last seasons with permission, maybe from Atletico Madrid. But just look at the table this season. There's this huge gap between Barcelona, Madrid, Atletico Madrid, and the other teams. There's a second tier of, let's say, European teams, Real Sociedad, Betis, Villarreal, Sevilla, and the other teams just begin every season just fighting for avoiding relegation. So there's a great task, there's a great job to do by La Liga, and I think that they're beginning to do the job by easing these restrictions, but always taking care of financial fair play, because what they don't want at all is the clubs increasing their debt and turning La Liga into a business organization which is financially unsustainable.
Jordi Sunyer, TV3. Do you get the sense that the ownership groups and the boards of Barcelona and Real Madrid do understand they need a league to play in and that they do need other teams to be healthy in this league as well? Do they really understand that, or is it just, you know, for the media and for the press, the statements, because they have to have a league to play in?
I think they do, but which is this league? Which league do they want to play? For them, the model is not the typical national league as they are playing right now, the Spanish La Liga or the Italian Serie A or even the English Premier League. But both Barcelona and Real Madrid, when they were thinking of the Super League project with Juventus that has quit this project in these last few weeks, they were thinking of an European Super League built in the mold of the Premier League, in which the clubs are the owners of the competition. I mean, what the most powerful Spanish clubs want is a competition in which the clubs and just the clubs and only the clubs decide what's best for them and for the league. So even in the Champions League, even in La Liga, you have this intermediate organization, be it UEFA, be it La Liga, that the most powerful clubs think it's not harmful, but it's unnecessary. They are able to do their thing. And of course, there has to be an organization and there has to be a federation of clubs just like the Premier League, but more autonomy, in their opinion, more autonomy has to be given to clubs for their daily business. So I think they realize they need a league, but they want their own league. Of course, they cannot play by themselves, but they need a league. The thing is discussing the conditions in which this league has to be played and which conditions are best for them.
Is Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona, Spain. Expanded FIFA Club World Cup. That is the word. It's going to come to the United States in 2025, right before the World Cup in 2026, and preceded by the 2024 Copa America. So three massive events here in the United States. Obviously, there's there's money changing hands everywhere in all of this. How do you feel about an expanded FIFA Club World Cup?
I think the perspective is very different if we talk about it from the States or from Europe, because one of the complaints for European footballers is the schedule is too packed. It's too tight. And of course, FIFA needs to expand football, needs to promote soccer in the States, and needs to find new markets and new business opportunities. But the question is creating or expanding competitions the best way of promoting soccer, and is demanding more effort from the players the best way to promote soccer in new markets? Because of course it means more money, and it means more games in places where you don't have the opportunity to watch live great stars of world football. But of course, these great stars of world football have played their national leagues, have played the Champions League, have played for the national team, have played Euros, have played World Cups, Super Cups, and loads of competitions. So you finally end fielding in these competitions. You end fielding players which are tired, which have played dozens of games, 60, 70 games per season. Last week I had the opportunity of providing commentary for the friendly game between Brazil and Guinea-Conakry, which was played in Barcelona. And I was counting the games, for example, that Vinicius has played this season. Vinicius de Oliveira has played 55 games for Real Madrid, because of course they reached the Champions League semifinals. And still they have to play these national team friendlies at the end of the season. So it's 55 games. Of course, looking from a European perspective, don't tell an NBA player to complain if he plays 80 games per season, because that's normal. But for a European soccer player, 55 games and then playing national team games and then expanding the Club World Cup. So that means 60 games in a year. Is it good for the players? I'm not sure about this.
Yeah. It's all about the volume now. We're talking to Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona. Let me switch gears here and kind of take you into Barcelona, and then a hit on Real Madrid as well. Ilkay Gundogan coming to Barcelona. It's a big one after doing the treble for Manchester City. Talk about the reaction there. Take me a little into Ansu Fati as well, and what his situation is, and if we think he can be that star at Barcelona.
It is a complicated situation at Barcelona, because of course they need to renew their squad, to turn their squad into a more competitive side for being able, of course, winning the Champions League is, in my opinion, right now, it's still impossible for Barcelona. I think their goal for next season is doing better and try to reach the last 16 or even the last 18 in the next UEFA Champions League. They need to strengthen their squad, but they cannot use the financial levers they used last season to bring Robert Lewandowski and Rafinha. So they need to rely on players that are out of contract, free agents, just like Ilkay Gundogan. So it's an intelligent signing. And you still see how Barcelona, even being in financial dire straits, are able to make the most of their brand. We are Barcelona. We still are Barcelona. And for Ilkay Gundogan, he may have had offers from Saudi Arabia, which financially are better for him. But hey, if Barcelona calls you, it's still Barcelona. And without Sergio Busquets, of course, Barcelona need a midfielder of world-class, international level in order to enhance their possibilities in the Champions League. It's a good signing. But on the other side, there's a strong possibility. They are trying to sign a Croatian Marcelo Brozovic from Inter Milan. But as Inter Milan asks for money to release Brozovic, the other option is signing, let's say, a veteran player from Girona, which was born in Catalonia, bred in La Masia, the famous academy of FC Barcelona, Oriol Romeu, which has been the MVP for Girona this season. And we're talking about signing a 32-year-old player that has been instrumental for Girona's success this season, because they have accomplished a very good season. But hey, you're signing, it's a dream for Oriol, of course, but you're signing a player from a mid-table team in his 30s. But that's the way it is. And it will be a slow process for Barcelona. Just the slow rebuilding of the stadium, because they will be playing, they will not be playing in at the Nou Camp this season. As you know, they will be playing at the Montjuïc Stadium in Barcelona, because Barcelona are not building their new stadium, but refurbishing the Camp Nou. So this will be a slow process. In the middle of it, if you can find this class of players, just like Ilkay Gundogan or Iñigo Martínez from Athletic Bilbao, that come for free agents, good players, well, that's okay. That's okay, but it won't be easy for Barca next season, nonetheless.
All right, that's part one with Jordi Sunyer of TV3 in Barcelona. Quick word here for LamontBrands.com. LamontBrands.com. You go there, you click on the icon in the right-hand corner. That's where you get your Soccer Matters t-shirts, great quality, light cotton. You get the trucker hats, wear it proudly. Soccer Matters, we know what that means. And, of course, all the proceeds go to the 501c charity, the Snowdrop Foundation, who provides scholarships for pediatric cancer patients, awareness and fundraising. Stick with us. We come back with part two, talk about Real Madrid with Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona. And waking up and making up one more time. This is
gone. This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Okay, final segment of the night tonight here on Soccer Matters is always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. 713-CALL NOW. They are bilingual. They will handle your case. They will work for you 24-7 nights and weekends. What I want you to know about John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, they are the best. When you're in a personal injury attorney case, you need the best. They're going to work 24-7 nights and weekends for you. They're going to fight for your right for compensation. It's the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL NOW. You might get in a car, boat, motorcycle accident, construction, drive an 18-wheeler. You need the best. The best is the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL NOW, bilingual. Part two right now with Jordi Sunyer from TV3 in Barcelona. How about Ansu Fati? Is he ready to take a larger piece of this team?
The thing about Ansu Fati is... of course, Ansu is one of the most marketable players that Barcelona have right now in their squad, in their roster. When I say marketable, of course, Barcelona need money. And after his serious injury or his string of injuries, Ansu Fati has lost maybe a little bit of that itch, of that spark he had when he was a youngster and he exploded at Barcelona first team. So the thing is, Barcelona have made too public that he's one of the players that was likely to leave the club because he's a marketable player and Barcelona can get money from a potential transfer of Ansu Fati. He's a good player, in my opinion. I think he won't be the star that maybe 4 or 5 years ago before the pandemic when he first played for Barcelona was bound to be because... He was a special player, but this string of injuries has been, in my opinion, has been really harmful for him. He can be a good player. He can be a good squad player, a good roster player, but he won't be the world, in my opinion, he won't be the world star he was bound to be. So, but the thing is, Barcelona have made too public that they could sell Ansu Fati or they were eager to sell Ansu Fati. Same case with Ferran Torres. Let's see what happens with it, but it's a feature of Barcelona, Glenn. Real Madrid don't do that. I don't know if it's all the media surrounding both teams, but when Barcelona needs to sell a player, everyone knows that Barcelona needs to sell a player. And what happens with this, that the other clubs know this, know that Barcelona are in a need to sell a player. And for example, Clément Lenglet was all loaned to Tottenham this season. There was a buyout clause. Tottenham could buy Clément Lenglet. And at the end of the season, they said, no, we are returning Clément Lenglet to Barcelona because we don't want to spend the buyout clause, spend the money that the buyout clause cost for Tottenham. This was, of course, a strategy negotiation to try to reduce the amount of money that Barcelona wanted for Clément Lenglet. So when you go so public in about the players you want to sell, it's not good for the club. And that's what's happening with Barcelona.
Hurts the negotiation position for sure. All right, give me a little take on Jude Bellingham. Real Madrid wins the sweepstakes for him. 19 years of age. I'm already hearing, you know, former English guys that played in the league. You know, there's a long history. Steve McManaman, Laurie Cunningham, Beckham, of course, talking about you got to learn the language culturally when you get there. But what about this signing for Real Madrid?
Traditionally, there has been talk of English players not settling that well in Spain. And especially, as you were mentioning, at Real Madrid, they have a tradition of bringing English players to the Spanish game. Michael Owen, David Beckham, Jonathan Woodgate. And
remember that story? What a rough time he had at Real Madrid.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to say. Because, of course, there have been English players that have settled in Spanish football and have done well, but others that haven't. And of course, I think with Jude Bellingham, there's still a big question mark on him. Will he succeed at Real Madrid? Of course, Real Madrid are building a very interesting midfield with young and talented players. Eduardo Camavinga, Aurélien Tchouaméni, and of course, right now, Jude Bellingham. They need to replace this midfield of Luka Modric and Toni Kroos. They have Federico Valverde, which can play on midfield or on the wing. They are doing well, but he's a young player. He has shown his skill, but many English players or some English players have come to Real Madrid and didn't settle to Spanish football. Will he? There's an advantage, in my opinion, and this advantage is called Carlo Ancelotti. No other manager on the planet knows as well as Carlo Ancelotti does how to accommodate a player onto the Real Madrid squad, because he's so flexible. I mean, he's not orthodox in terms of tactics, of strategy, or playing a 4-3-3 or 4-4-2 or any other system. He accepts to adapt his way of playing to the players he has. And I think this is good for Jude Bellingham, because Ancelotti will try to adapt his idea of play for the next season according to the players he has. Another big question mark, who will be the central striker for Real Madrid next season? It's difficult that it's Joselu coming on loan from Espanyol. If there's a big surprise and finally Kylian Mbappe comes to Real Madrid, Kylian Mbappe is not a center forward. He's not a striker. Will Real Madrid play with a false number nine? And who will be this false number nine? Could it be Kylian Mbappe, or could it be Rodrigo, that has played as a false number nine this season and has done well? There are still many question marks around Real Madrid, but with I think with Carlo Ancelotti, everything is a little bit easier. I like this way of working, because in football, I think it's important not to be that orthodox and trying to be flexible. Zinedine Zidane did that, if you remember, and you know how many trophies he won with Real Madrid.
By the way, Joselu, 33 years of age, was at Espanyol, 33 appearances, 16 goals, and spent time at Real Madrid B, so they're very familiar with him. And this is another example of what you mentioned, Jordi, making moves within the league.
Yeah. There's a thing in this story that, as you know, Espanyol were relegated to the second division, and they had some very good players for the type of team that's Espanyol trying to avoid relegation, which they finally couldn't avoid. But Joselu scored 14 goals 2 seasons ago for Alaves, scored the same amount of goals or nearly this season for Espanyol. They also have Sergi Darder, another very good player, very good midfielder, attacking midfielder. For these two players, the two most important players, players for Espanyol, they had a clause in their contracts allowing them for allowing them to go on loan to another first division team if in case of relegation. So it's a strange clause, but it's a clause set by Espanyol, thinking that Espanyol next year will be back again to the top flight. It's risky, of course, but the story with Joselu is that Real Madrid has taken profit of this clause and have brought to their team, let's say, a roster player, a second or third unit player for free. And if it works, fantastic. If it doesn't work and Espanyol gets promoted, they will be clear favorites. He can return to Espanyol.
But I understand Luka Modric has resigned. Real Madrid's looking at Alfonso Davies down the road. They've also brought back, I think they're going to get Brahim Diaz from AC Milan on a loan. So they're doing some business. They're also watching Arda Güler. I don't know if you watch much Turkish football, but he plays for Fenerbahce. He's 18. He's a little number 10. The fans absolutely love this kid. The man who owns the club is a guy named Ali Koç, who went to school here in Houston. I knew him when he was in college. And his family, and he now runs Fenerbahce. And he's got a big problem because, you know, there's big offers coming in for this 18-year-old kid, but the fans love him so much they could have a huge backlash if they sold him.
Yeah, I haven't seen him play. I must admit, I haven't seen Arda Güler, but of course, all the talk about the player is that he's a tremendous number 10 and can be one of the best players in the business in the near future. But according to Spanish media, the thing is that with all this hype, it's not only the price tag that Fenerbahce may put to the player, is that agents surrounding the player, intermediaries are asking for more money and asking for a fee for signing for a top club. A little bit like what happened with Erling Braut Haaland before he signed for Manchester City. It was like kind of a fair. You put a player on a stall and many clubs go to buy a player, and who pays the most amount of money is the club that buys the player. So there's a lot of hype around this young guy. He's 18. He's played in Turkish football. Turkish football is not English football. It's not Spanish football. It's not Italian football. Well, we'll have to see. I'm always very cautious about this genre of players because Barcelona 2 years ago signed Emre Demir from another Turkish team. And he was also bound to be a very good player. There have been these last few years, 3-4 Turkish young players that have been labeled the next Turkish sensation, and they failed to succeed in other European clubs. So keep calm. He's 18. Let's see what happens. Transfer market is crazy, you know that, but we have to keep calm, in my opinion.
And it can be silly as well. Jordi, as always, thank you very much for coming on. My regards again to your son, Alex. And thank you for coming
you
on.
Very,
very insightful stuff. We loved it. Thank you.
He we have. Fortunately, he we have. And we could have a very good conversation. Thank you very much for having me again.
Jordi Sunyer, TV3. That's a great way to end the show tonight here. Again, we remind you, you can sign up and for Spotify, Apple, Google, subscribe, listen to the podcast of the show, listen to it live every Thursday night at 7 o'clock Central. Of course, our presenting sponsor, thank you so much, DaspitLaw.com. John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, 713-CALL-NOW. They are bilingual personal injury attorneys. They are the best. It is DaspitLaw.com. For producer Andrew Carlson, Guillermo Lazo Romero, I'm Glenn Davis. Remember, soccer matters.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.